Can you be present for discouragement and just see that as arising and ceasing? If we try to evaluate our practice, it used to be good, now it's not. It was like this, now it's different. If you notice that life is just like that, we're healthy, then we're sick. We're full of energy, then we're not. We're young, then we're old. The raccoon didn't come then, it came. Life is just like that. Sayadaw Upandita also told me early on, he said, we cannot judge ourselves. This is not useful. Because the judging mind is not what we are. And the judging mind is not pure presence. But the other thing is that when we practice, it's like if you were cleaning a blackboard or painting a wall, and before the paint, the wall was a certain color. Then you paint it. Then you start to see, oh, I missed over there, and I missed over there. And the bits that you didn't paint stick out a lot more. But you painted the whole wall. It was a completely different color. So when we refine our present moment awareness, of course, when we first sit down, the mind is just all over the place. So we sit and we sit and we sit and we're present and we feel so happy that we can be present and it just cools down. But after you get good at being present, it starts to show its other refined, more embedded restlessness or deeper levels of hostility and ill will that you didn't even know were there because there was so much other traffic going on that you could never see the wanderer sitting on the sidewalk begging because the street was so full of traffic. So the mind is so full of thinking. We can't see those finer tones of what we haven't dealt with for lifetimes. It's buried deep. And when your pure presence becomes stronger, you can go deeper. When you start to go deeper, you start to see other things that you never noticed before. And your instant evaluation is, I lost the plot, no good anymore, it's not as peaceful. But actually, you're looking at things, patterns, habits, nuances of how you've been for a century or 1,000 years. But you could never see that before because there was layer on top of layer, and there are many other layers. And the work keeps going. It gets deeper and deeper. It's like miners. You're mining for precious gems. And you're still just penetrated into the ground. You haven't even made a big hole yet. Got miles to go. Robert Frost, miles to go before I sleep. We got miles to go before we weep. And then when we reach the oasis from where it all erupts or begins, we will have tears of joy, not critical complaints or editorial comments. She's like that, she's no good. I found that a very useful reflection. And just being able to look at myself, what I think is this, is not. It's just noisy, and it quietens down. And then as it quietens down, as the habit mind, the thoughts, the restlessness, the upset, where there's a lot of things that are very upsetting in life, and we just get on with it, because we're determined women. We're just going to push through. So one of the things that I've been pondering lately is, when I started out this path, the very first thing, when I was young, this was in Myanmar, I came to the monastery thinking, well, I could be in robes. Innocent. Clueless. And I go to my teacher and I say, may I take the ordination? I wanted to be a fully ordained bhikkhuni. He said, no such thing. But you just asked me to attend an ordination for a monk. But I was on retreat, so I didn't want to go to any ceremonies. He said, no, for women, not possible. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't understand it. I couldn't process it. It made no sense. It still makes no sense. But this is what we face in this reality of this world. This is the creation of division, separation, judgment. One is better than another. You're this color, you're this shape, you're this gender. You don't count. So I had to overcome the disbelief and then sputter forth, well, what else can I get? What leftovers can I get? I want the best of whatever else there is. And you know what? You get full ordination. You still get the same treatment. It still happens. I still have to watch it. And every time it comes up, I have to go to what I have is more precious than somebody else's stamp of approval. I have the Dhamma. When we have the Dhamma, when we know the way in, we just go there. We don't need somebody else to say, yes, you can, or no, you can't. That's just worldly stuff. So it happened the other day, you know. I was told again, oh, by a monk, you know, yes, you can come on this day, but you can't come on this day because certain people will be there and we don't fit into that picture. So no, you can't. It's not going to work. No buts. It's the world. That's not important. But to see where the ego grasps that and wants to set it right and wants to make it better, it never will be. There'll be always somebody that's put down, put in jail because of somebody's judgment or opinion about who you are. And here, we sit in front of a shrine with the Buddha's teaching in the heart. We don't need anybody's opinion about what we are. We are absolutely perfect exactly as we are. Because what we think we are and what the world thinks we are is not true. And the truth of what we are is timeless. We cannot judge it. So when you're sitting in front of the shrine practicing the Dhamma, you cannot judge the timelessness of the truth that is sitting in your heart, that is what you are. Because your thinking mind cannot sit on that, cannot always. And when it does, we rejoice. And when it doesn't, we have to remember thinking, judging, not mindful, not present, and then come back. That's it. It's always just knowing that that's a judgment. It's an opinion. It's not true. It's conceptualized reality, not real, not true. And at that moment, we are free. So every moment of freedom, the Dhamma is alive and well. The light is shining. But you see so many people that are mean and selfish and aggressive and trying to make the world into something it isn't, or trying to spoil or murder or steal or do really terrible things. But they have a light within them. They don't see that. They're blind. We also have blindness, but we're learning to see. We can't show them how to see, but in the middle of their blindness, the only escape from that is to come back to seeing things as they truly are. The world is not right, not perfect, not free. Our best effort is to avoid that, but we can't control what people do. So when others behave in ways that are unskillful and harmful, dangerous, deadly, we may be able to avoid that or not get involved with it, but at some point we come back to knowing that that's not Dhamma, and to have compassion. And when we can't come to the Dhamma in the present moment, have compassion for all the delusion we've grown up with, that we've been surrounded by, in school or at home, in the shopping centers, in the devices, what kids are dealing with now. This generation is so challenged. What they have to deal with is beyond anything. It's just like Mara shouting from a mountaintop. This is the truth. This is real. And then we let it go. If we have kids, we try our best to protect them from that. But it's predominant. We don't know the karma of other people. And many beings may come to this world for some reason we don't understand, some spiritual test. And some may have more difficult tests than we understand. So that's true, the bigger picture. But the bigger picture has in it a little picture right here, which is attachment to self. And as soon as there is a nuance, a smell of the self, if we can notice the me and the mine in the moment, there is the big picture. And then there is the little picture of when you're struggling with poor mind states, never mind about the world, but our own lack of practice. The bigger picture, yes, is that we don't know where we're walking, but here and now we know that we can be present for not being present. It's a slightly, I've used that. I've myself walked by a river and had that. I've even given a talk like that about not knowing where the river was going, but trusting the present moment and trusting the current, which will take. The Buddha gives an analogy of human life where some people are born and die quickly, and some people are born and die and live longer, and some live a long, long time. But we don't really know where our lifetimes and lifetimes lead, because this going to the sea all these rivers go to the sea, and the ocean of samsara is big, but the ocean of compassion is the greater. And all beings have the potential to realize that. And that we don't know when or how, and we just have to trust. I was just reflecting on our inability to see, and our inability to see can change in 1 second as soon as we know this is not who I am. This is just ego, opinion, judgment. And as soon as you have that, that's a moment of mindfulness. 1 moment of mindfulness and you are following the truth, which is the ocean of wisdom. It's infinite. It's timeless. It's deathless. That's why mindfulness is the path to the deathless. 1 moment of mindfulness is back on the track, back on the path. So if you're really present, and then you try to conceptualize your awareness, this is really a distraction from present moment awareness, which is pure. There's no concept, there's no thinking about it. It's just being aware of awareness, being mindful that consciousness knows this moment. It knows that this knowing is love itself. And you cannot speak about that in terms of other people's consciousness, because consciousness is undivided. It's not based on other people or other... This is concept. This is thinking. But to know present moment awareness is on a different level than thought. You cannot speak about it with thought. So right away, your reference point is a different reality. It's not truth. You just want to get a nice concept that you can rest your mind in so that you can get quiet. But if you could give up that train of thinking and come back to presence within the heart, it has no time in it. And you can't separate it because it is a loving quality. It doesn't divide anyone or anything. And it doesn't go inside or outside. These are all ideas. But when you exit the dimension of ideas, you are knowing from a different space, which we can't put into words. You need the thinking to get in your car and drive your car and steer all that, but then when you're steering in the domain of the Dhamma, there's no space. It's spaceless, it's traceless, it's timeless. It's egoless, and it's free. And there's a joy that even that you can't do anything with that. It's not this world. You can't capitalize on it, package it. I had this kind of joy. It's better than yours. It just makes no sense. It's just what it is. So here, we sit in the heart, perfect as we are. Because the truth of what we are is timeless, egoless. It's spaceless. faceless. And it's free.